Det här är Drupal Easy, poddsändning nummer 60.
Hello and welcome once again to the Drupal Easy podcast. This is episode number 60, kind of a milestone for us, I guess. I'm your host for today, Ryan Price, and joining us from Belgium, as his summer tradition recommends, is Mike Anello.
Hello, Mr. Price. How are you?
It's wonderful. I'm actually in a different location today as well. There's a co-working space here in Orlando called Urban Rethink, and I decided to do the podcast from here today. I'm sitting in one of the conference rooms, and so far, not too much noise outside. Sometimes we get like a fire truck going by, so I will apologize in advance if you hear like large vehicles driving by the window.
That's exciting. Exciting.
Yeah, hey, right?
Before we introduce our guest, I don't want to forget to mention, I went up to Drupal Jam up in Holland yesterday.
Nice.
It's basically a Dutch Drupal camp, but they call it Drupal Jam. Everyone there was super nice. I just want to say thank you to the organizers. I believe his name is Bart. Oh, I should know that. I talked to him for a little while. Most everything was in Dutch, so I struggled a bit. There was one session that was in English that was very good, but I met a lot of great people, and I just want to say thank you to everybody, and especially the guys from Crimson here in Antwerp who actually kind of gave me a ride up and hung out with me all day, so that was nice.
Awesome. Well, this is another one of our super European shows, as you are in Belgium, and our guest today is in Sweden, I believe. I know that most of the time you're in Sweden. It's Johan Falk from Node One.
Hello. Very glad to be here.
Definitely. So, Johan, a little bit about yourself, at least what I've got on my Google Docs here, is you're working as a trainer and a developer for Node One, and you can find some information about that, nodeone.se. That's a Swedish domain. You do a lot of screencasts. You've done almost 30 screencasts just about views, and you did a whole big series about Page Manager, which I have started working my way through, a lot about rules as well. You're a big fan of rules?
Yes, I am.
So you got a lot of screencasts out there, and then you've also worked on a couple of Drupal books. What is it, anything that our audience could pick up? Most of us are English speakers.
Yeah, sure. You could read any of the book, assuming you have a English-Swedish lexicon nearby. But I am actually right now translating the second book into English. And we're working pretty hard at Node One to get that ready for DrupalCon London later in August.
What are the are they general Drupal books, or are they specific to module development or anything in particular?
They are advanced configuration, Drupal configuration, so site building using modules.
All right, so right up your screencasting alley, it sounds like, with views and Page Manager and Flag and all that stuff.
Yes, and rules.
And of course, very good.
So, and your screen name, I've always wanted to ask, Intangelo, do you pronounce it? And then number two, where does it start? Where did it come from?
Usually I don't pronounce it, but if I would, it would sound like Itangalo, something like that. It's a nonsense word I caught in a song a long time ago and started using back in the days when you were playing Diablo, and it's kind of stuck.
Ryan, let me give you a little analogy. So that would be as if your Twitter name was Susu Studio.
Oh, no.
Which I think we may have just found the name of our podcast.
Wow.
The title of episode 60.
Susu Studio, what's that?
Oh, Johan, you got to go back and pick up some old Phil Collins.
Okay.
Back when Phil Collins knew how to rock.
I don't think he's ever forgotten, actually.
I'm going to find myself a time machine and check that out.
I'm gonna actually embarrass myself right now, because my wife and I actually went to go see Phil Collins in concert, I would say maybe 3 or 4 years ago, because we were both Phil Collins fans back in the day, but the show we saw 3 or 4 years ago was just kind of sad. It was just kind of sad. We'll just leave it at that.
Yeah.
All right. So that's a little bit about you, Johan. Anything else that you want to add? Here's a question I always like to ask. How did you get started in Drupal? Like, did you get a job and then say, now you must learn Drupal, or did you come across it on your own?
No, I was a science journalist at the time, being an editor for a popular science magazine. And for a small amount of my time, I could work with the website we used. And I pretty quickly discovered that we needed some kind of new system for running a new CMS. And I found this Joomla thing that seemed interesting. And then the web shop I talked to said, well, maybe you want to try this Drupal instead. And I did, and I kind of got stuck and got involved, started writing guides. At that time, basically all my time I spent in the Swedish Drupal community, in the Swedish Drupal group. And I started writing guides and answering questions and stuff. And then, I don't know, 2 years later or so, I got an offer for a job at Node 1 as a Drupal trainer and developer.
So what version of Drupal were you using when you first started?
And when I first started for real, it was Drupal 5 something. I have done a Drupal 4.6 or maybe 4.7 installation. I think it was 4.6. But that was at a time when I needed help from a friend to get the database running.
All right, so let's talk about the screencast for a while, because this was kind of the reason why, you know, we said we have to have Johan on, because what you've been doing lately has been it's been absolutely amazing, and the pace that you've been at is crazy. And it seemed crazy to me until I read your recent blog post.
Oh.
About how you actually, you know, put together these series. And the thing that amazed me, and I kind of want you to talk about it a little more, almost, I don't want to say recap what you put in the blog post, but I have a feeling a lot of it is going to be the same. But you actually lock yourself in a quiet place and pump out an entire series in a day, it sounds like.
Right, when it's possible, that's what I do.
So, I believe the 27 views screencast you did, correct me if I'm wrong, but you did those because your flight got delayed out of DrupalCon Chicago, and you had So rather than me telling the story, why don't you tell the story? Because I find this amazing.
Yeah. Actually, what I wanted to do was to make a screencast series about Page Manager and panels and stuff. But it doesn't make sense to try to explain how to use Page Manager and panels if you don't know how to use views, and also how to use views in kind of complex ways. So that's what I wanted to do to start with. And while in DrupalCon Chicago, I got my hands on the Git version of views, including the new user interface. And that kind of got me started on doing view screencasts. And then the flight was canceled back home. So we had like 36 hours or something. We had to wait for a new flight. And I more or less locked myself in the hotel room and recorded screencasts.
So when you go ahead and when you decide that you're going to do this, I mean, how much of a plan do you have as far as I'm going to do 27 screencasts, and screencast one is going to cover this, screencast two is going to cover this. I mean, how deep does your plan go?
I usually have, when I start thinking about a screencast series, well, to start from the beginning, I always have some kind of notes somewhere where I collect my ideas for screencasts. Mm-hmm. And it could be like, oh, I should do something about views, a view screencast, or it could be a very particular thing like, in this view screencast, I want to cover how to use multiple arguments in one argument or something. Mm-hmm. And then eventually, before I start recording screencasts, I try to order these notes into something that looks like a bullet list. And then I start going from the beginning to the end. And I have some kind of outline, but not very much details when I start.
So, you know, we should probably mention, I don't think we've mentioned yet, all of these screencasts are free.
You know, yeah. And I'm very happy to be able to publish them for free. for anyone to access.
And each episode is, I believe, what, 8 to 12 minutes long, that type of range?
Yes. I aim for 5 to 10 minutes, but I usually, well, usually it's 10 or maybe 8 to 12 minutes then.
So, are you doing this in addition to your work for Node 1, or do you do these and then kind of reuse them to train clients and things like that? Is it kind of like a two-for-one type of thing?
Yeah. I have, at Node 1, I have a very nice deal. I can spend parts of my time doing basically whatever I like, as long as it's related to Drupal training. Mm-hmm. And when we have client training going on, that's what I spend that time on. But not all of that time goes to client training and open Drupal courses and stuff like that. So when I lock myself in a room and record a screencast series, I can count that time as working time, which means basically I can take another day off or so.
So you know, it's funny because Ryan and I, at one point we were talking about doing screencasts as well. But we got bogged down in the planning stage.
Oh,
I mean, right, Ryan. We had these grand plans, but we said, well, first we have to do this, then we have to do this, then we have to do that, and then we can record the screencast.
No. I think that's what's being called the waterfall approach here. Mm-hmm.
Yes, perhaps.
I would really recommend if anyone wants to do screencast, just start doing it. The first screencast I made were really horrible, really horrible. I still laugh at them. But I mean, you learn when you do stuff, and you get feedback, and you learn from the feedback, and that's how it goes.
Yeah, the big mistake I think that we made is we tried to record it from beginning to end. So the first time you make a film, apparently this is one of the things you do when you're a little kid and you borrow your father's video camera, or maybe now your dad's iPad, in case of Mike's kids. You pick up the video camera and you say, okay, the first thing that's going to happen is this, and that's the first thing that you film. And then the second thing is going to be the second thing that you film. And I think one of the things that you've identified, Johan, is you start with the outline, and then you do all the screencasts, and then you go back and you do the summary. But when you watch them, you don't know that. So instead of recording them in the way that they'll be watched, you record them in the order that makes most sense, right?
Yes, I guess that's true.
When the most sense them, for you as a production.
Yeah, I had the impression, I don't know since I know the screencast too well, but I until a few seconds ago, I thought that most people realized that I record every screencast, well, all the episodes in a sequence, and then afterwards record the summary. Because I tried to record the summary first, and that's just silly, because every screencast series I make turn up to be something different than I planned for. So I have to remake that summary anyway.
Yeah, I mean, you're smarter when you're done with all the episodes about what was actually covered. So yeah, it makes the most sense to do it then.
Yeah.
And that way, you know, the summary can be the introduction, or it can be the conclusion, or you know, it's the same, and it's going to make sense.
I did something really cool this weekend for the book I'm writing. I've done quite extensive exercises to learn Drupal when you're reading the book, and I recorded all these exercises, how to solve the exercises or go through them, and then also demonstrating the end result for each exercise. And I think I'm going to use that approach more in the future, because that was really interesting. Like building a feature, building something, and then stopping the video, making a new recording, saying, okay, this is what I built, here is how it works, and now I'm going to show you how I built it.
Right, so you build it, and then you show it, and then when you actually put the screencast together, you reverse them.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, so it's kind of like the old, I'm going to tell you what I'm going to do, then I'm going to show you what I'm going to do, and then I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
Perfect. Hey, so rather than let's move away from talking about the mechanics about recording the screencast. Let's talk about teaching Drupal. What do you think as far as you call them advanced configuration You know, what's the most difficult thing that you find to teach when it comes to Drupal? And we're not talking module development or theming. We're talking, you know, in the realm of, you know, advanced configuration.
Huh. That's a really good question. I think it very much depends on what kind of learner you got, mm-hmm. or student. I always start with Drupal Basics. Sometimes the client knows Drupal Basics already, and then mm-hmm. the next thing after that is Views. You can't do anything sensible with Drupal unless you know Views.
Right.
And when you're done Views, then you do more Views, because there's so much in the Views module that you can't really... Well, even if you know the basics, there is twice as much more to learn.
Yeah, I always find that the real turning point comes when somebody understands arguments, or now they're called, yeah. I guess, contextual arguments. Once you can start diving deep into that, that bumps you up a notch on your certified to rock score, I think.
Yes, definitely. Also, relationships in Views is one of these hurdles.
Right.
And then starting combining relationships and contextual filters, then you got something that can really mess up your head.
Or make you a lot of money.
Yes.
One or the other.
Or both at the same time.
Yes, that's absolutely possible.
when it comes to... Well, it's kind of difficult to know what's most difficult in advanced configuration. I know very many people have problems with rules, find that a very complex and difficult to use module. I think that is partly because of rules in Drupal 6 having a kind of complex and non-intuitive interface,
mm-hmm.
But also because it's very, it's so really abstract.
Right.
You can't really, well, if you want to describe what rules does, it's like, well, it makes things happen on your website. And it's the same with Views. If you try to explain Views, you could say, well, you use Views to make lists.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, if you know Views, it sounds like, well, you can do so much more with Views, like creating tables and slideshows and maps and whatever. And just saying that you can do lists with it is silly. But it's much more difficult to describe rules because you don't even have any place to start.
So this might be going down a rabbit hole a little bit, but I don't believe I've messed with rules in Drupal 7. Is the user interface considerably different?
It is not considerably different, but there are some new mechanics in it that makes it kind of different to use. I've not gotten into all the stuff there yet. So I'm still a newbie when it comes to rules in Drupal 7. But it is, it's the same kind of thinking in Drupal 7 as in Drupal 6. But the interface is, in Drupal 7 you have, for example, loops. When you configure actions in rules, you can now have a multiple value field. If you have, say, a user reference field with users, you can loop through that field and for each user send out an email, for example.
Right. Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it's really useful.
So what do you? What's the next screencast series? I know that there's one you just started. Is that kind of, how far do you envision that one going? Why don't you tell us a little bit about that one?
Yeah, that's an experiment I'm running. It's learn coding for Drupal. I'm mostly a site builder, I'm just recently starting coding, so it's kind of interesting for me to make screencasts about coding, but I've got some really good feedback on that, so I think I'm going to continue it. I didn't have the chance to lock myself in the room all day. It was just a few hours, so it was, I think, 6 or maybe 7 episodes. The stuff I recorded this weekend will be published, well, soon. I hope I can put everything out before DrupalCon London.
Awesome.
And then after that, well, I'm actually going to look now into my notes here to see what I've got.
See what your brain told you 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, exactly. let's see if I can find it. All right,
Mike, we should have like a hold music.
I should. Let me look for hold music really quick.
You got your whole soundboard there. Find me the girl from Ipanema.
Oh, boy. I got nothing. I've got just a lot of annoying sounds. That's all I've got.
Oh, okay. Okay, I found the list anyway. here's a pretty good thing, I think. A screencast series about advanced configuration, but going out into the real world, finding a website and saying, hey, here's a kind of neat functionality on this website. Now we're going to build it in Drupal.
Oh, so kind of like, I get it. Just like, you know, cloning a non-Drupal site using Drupal.
Yeah. Mike and I had a secret plan for that a long time ago, and we were going to call it the Blue Pages, because blue apparently is the Drupal color.
Yes.
Apparently it's the Drupal color?
Yes.
Well, that's you know, the obvious choice, I guess. If you're going to make a directory of useful design patterns that you could reproduce in Drupal, my thought was to call it the Blue Pages.
There you go. And now the secret's out. All right, what do we got? Let's move on. Next story.
Yep. Next story.
Oh, are we doing stories now? And we're done with Johan?
Well, I think that was kind of the first. Johan was the first story. We're not done with
those Swedes.
We're not. Hey.
Not done entirely.
Didn't the Swedes bring us? The Swedes brought us IKEA and meatballs.
Yes, and Vikings.
Both of which
and
I
Vikings.
Love.
I know. And if you can somehow combine the three of them, that, you know, you have magic on your hands right there.
Yeah, they actually did that once. It became ABBA.
See, now you're not helping. You're hurting yourself by mentioning ABBA.
Oh.
Mike.
Yes, sir.
I am feeling a little strapped for cash right now.
Are you?
Can you help me?
It depends. What do you need the cash for, Mr. Price?
Well, apparently I need it to educate people about Drupal or engage the community to learn more about and become more involved in the project.
Then yes, Mr. Price, I know a way to help you.
Yeah?
So this is awesome. This is something that Thomas Turnbull and I have been working on for a little over a month with the Drupal Association, and it just kind of went live, I think, late last week. But it's called the Drupal Community Cultivation Grants. And this is a way for the association to, and I guess you can quote me on this, to plow money back into the community. Because the association is profitable. You know, they make money from, well, they earn money from dues, from Drupal cons, from all kinds of things. And that money is there to grow the Drupal community. So one of the ideas was, well, let's start offering grants, you know, to people who want to build community. So we put together this program called Drupal Community Cultivation Grants, where anybody can apply. And we try to make the application process as simple as possible. It's literally a web form on association.drupal.org/grants. You can go there, you can read all about it, and you can click over the web form, and we asked for the most basic information we could about what you want to do and what you want the money for and when you need it by and who are you. And, you know, we're just looking for enough information to get a sense of what you want to do. And then,
so what could it be? What kind of stuff do you expect?
Well, the things that we thought, the concepts we thought originally were, if there's a small community that wants to put on a Drupal event, like a small Drupal camp, but they don't have experience finding sponsors and they don't have money, or, you know, they don't want to and they shouldn't have to take money out of their pockets to, you know, book a venue. You know, they could approach the association and say, hey, look, we have 20 people here who want to organize a Drupal camp, but we need some help. We think that we can get a lot more people involved if we just kind of got a nice little send-off. So they could apply for $1,000, $1,500, $2,000 from the association to, you know, book a venue or do some marketing or something. So that was one idea. You know, some other concepts, which this is all on the website, association.drupal.org/grants. Drupal sprints for newbies. And it's not so much a code sprint as it is a camp that's focused on beginners. You know, maybe like a one-track camp on introduction to Drupal. Something, as long as it grows the Drupal community, that's the key phrase, because that is the mission of the association, to support and grow the community.
Right. So, and what I like here is that it right after it spells out what could it be used for. It says it cannot be used for to direct the Drupal software. So you can't fund Drupal core development, customizations to Drupal core, or custom module development.
Yeah, this was something...
You can't directly say, like, hey, I have a cool idea for a module, give me money. That's not what this application is about.
No, and the association, from their bylaws, are not allowed to fund things like that. They are not allowed to fund code development, period.
And that's basically to prevent the association from becoming the good old boys club, right?
Well, you know, that's from...
To put it into plain English.
Well, yeah, basically. You don't want any one group being able to direct to have a bigger say than anybody else in the direction of Drupal, the software, the code. But that being said, while we won't pay for, we won't provide grants to pay people to code, if there is a broad-based initiative going on, and we had a hard time even coming up with an example, but let's just say Drupal didn't have translations. If a bunch of people got together and said, hey, we want to make Drupal translatable. We want to, be able to provide it in multiple languages, and we want to get these five people in the same room to work it out, that might be something. I say might because we're still trying to figure all this out, but that might be something where we would be able to help pay travel expenses. Just get the people in the same room.
And if you wanted to learn people how to code for Drupal,
yes,
then that's something you could apply for money.
Absolutely, absolutely. And this is all a big learning experience for the association as well, as far as what should we fund and what shouldn't we fund, and what are some creative ideas that people might have that we haven't thought of. So we're looking for any and all ideas at this point. So the way we're going to do it is we have two grant cycles that are announced. The first one started about a week ago, and it will close July 31st. So if you get your grant proposal in before July 31st, we will announce the first recipients during DrupalCon London in the August 22nd to 26th, in that time frame. The second cycle is going to begin August 1st and run through September 30th. And then we will announce the second group of recipients no later than mid-October. Hmm. So we're looking to, grow the community and help people out.
Yeah.
So spread the word.
It seems great that there is such short cycles. Because, if you want to organize a meetup or something, you don't want to have to wait for 4 months to get a decision about any grants.
Yeah, exactly. And that was, that's something that Thomas and I have been talking about even, the past few days about, is there, do we need to shorten it, make it even shorter? Or we want to avoid a first-come, first-serve situation. Absolutely. We don't want that. But at the same time, we don't want small organizations to have to plan 6 months in advance, We want to be able to say, hey, we need money. Oh, look, here's a way we can get it in a month or two.
Yeah.
Let's go for it.
That's a great thing. How many applications have you gotten so far?
We have gotten one so far.
One so far. Okay, so if I'm really quick, I might be able to have a good chance here.
Yeah, and we haven't done too much marketing yet. It went on Drupal Planet last week. There was a tweet that went out. I think it was either yesterday or earlier today. This podcast will go out probably in the next couple of days. Thomas and I are going to do some additional tweets, some additional Planet posts. We're going to get the word out best we can, but I really think this is going to be one of those things that is going to be kind of word of mouth. And as one organization, maybe after the first round of grants are awarded, I think that's going to help spread the word a lot.
Yeah.
So if you have any questions, you know, if anyone has any questions, go to the website and there is a contact us. And you can, you know, send Thomas and I an email and we usually get back to you within a couple hours. And we're actually even toying with the idea of setting a set date and time to be available on IRC to have kind of a discussion, a community discussion about it, if anybody has questions and stuff like that. So more to come.
Awesome. More to come.
Awesome, awesome. Well, I guess we are going to have Johan lead us into the next story. One of the initiatives that was identified during DrupalCon Chicago by Dries, or really shortly thereafter, I guess, was the need for Drupal to have a better way of handling configuration management. Right, Johan?
Yes.
And this is something that you, as a site builder, sort of, you know, that's what you're specializing in, that's what you teach a lot, this is something that's really going to affect what you do and how you talk to everyone about it, yeah?
Yeah, it is, especially when you do site building in a professional way. Before I started doing Drupal as my job, I didn't know much about this stuff, but then you start thinking about version controlling your configuration, and it becomes a whole different matter. And Greg Dunlap, Hey Rocker, he has this initiative for Drupal 8 about configuration management and deployment, meaning that, well, in essence, it should be possible to take configuration and hopefully also content and push them between sites without any problems at all. And
so what I think is really interesting... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No. Well, I wasn't going to dive into this post, so I can wait 30 seconds for that. No problem.
What I think is really interesting is this is really pulling on some innovations that, as far as I know, were invented by members of the Drupal community and perfected. So right now we've got features. Some people may be familiar with features. That's based on a pattern that was introduced by Earl Miles. That's your drinking game. And in Vue,
I got one right here.
Where you can have default configuration that lives in a file, and then you can have that be overridden and have that live in the database. And then if you want to, you can then do stuff with code to manipulate it, whether it's in the database or in the file. And then if you like what you've done, then you can save it back to a file.
Yeah. In Drupal 8, well, like 1 or 2 weeks ago, something like that, at DrupalCon Colorado, Drupal Camp Colorado, sorry, there was a meetup with a number of quite big core contributors. And they talked about how to solve this, and they actually made, I think, some actual examples of this, some actual code, which can be downloaded and tested. And now there's a post at groups.drupal.org. I think it's actually on the front page of groups, called Summary of Configuration Management Sprint. And it's triggered like a ton of comments because there are people, well, obviously, apparently people are very, very interested in this and want to discuss how it's implemented. And what they're suggesting and have built so far is a way to store, as you say, configuration in code and having more or less the code as the default storage. It is pluggable. It should be pluggable, so you can change it to something else, like a non-relational database or whatever you want to have. But it's stored in code as default. And then when Drupal loads, this goes into some kind of database or something. It loads stuff into some kind of memory to make it accessible more easily. But when you, for example, go and save a view, you can have that stored directly into a file, which is then possible to push into another site and have that site's configuration being updated.
So it looks like, correct me if I'm wrong, I'm just going through this this post. It looks like the sprint was basically focused on the API for this, correct?
Yes, I think so. I wasn't there, but that's my impression as well.
Yeah, so I mean, this is really half of the problem. The other half of the problem is basically exposing this API virtually everywhere in Drupal where a configuration change can happen. To put this in layman's terms, the end result is going to be that if you have three developers working on a dev site and they're all in there, you know, changing blocks around, adding CCK fields, creating views, adding permissions, setting permissions, and everything else you do, you know, with point and click, all of that, the idea is to save, to have all of that saved in files, whether it's an optional save in files or it's actually always happening. And that way, when you want to push those changes to stage or to production, you don't have to re-click and re-point and click. You just have to kind of move those files.
Yeah,
that's the big dream of all, the big rainbow in the sky.
Yeah,
and so one of the big impacts of this, I think, is going to be that, you know, right now we have a lot of people that they're sort of very slow in updating their Drupal modules from 6 to 7 because they're trying to use some of the newer, you know, patterns that are available, like entities, for example, fields on stuff. So does that mean that we're now going to have that same kind of a lag from 7 to 8 when everyone basically must update their module? Well, I guess they won't have to, right? They could keep using their own custom database tables, but the idea being you'd have to rewrite your module so that it uses these, and they're proposing to use JSON strings because they're really lightweight, they're really easy to parse, and they're really easy to store. And in some situations, they're easier to search through, I guess.
And they're fairly readable. They're fairly readable as well.
Yeah. They're very easy to read as a person.
Right.
Yeah.
But we have to rewrite all of your modules so that when you're storing information, like anything you would do now, where you're saving out, you know, quote unquote features, you'll be able to basically write those things and store them in files. And you know, you're moving these things around as files now, and there should be a system in core for doing that, but it means that everyone has to rewrite their modules.
So, yeah. I mean, assuming that this comes to pass, is this the end of features module?
I think yes and no. I think it's the end of using features module as a deployment tool.
Well, yes. God willing it is.
Yeah. But when it was created, as far as I understand, it was created not as a way to version control code and have it deployed, but as a way to just bundle features together.
Right.
With the Open Atrium project. I think that was what got features really going. The ability to be able to turn on two views and one content type and, I don't know, a few other things with just one click.
And then it also seems to me that if you combine this, you know, assuming again this comes to pass, combine this with Drush Make, and you have a radically faster way to create installation profiles.
Yeah.
Okay, well, here's what I have to say, Mike, actually. You know, your question is, does this get rid of features? I don't think it does, because just like Johan was saying, the bundling of two things together, a content type and a view, or a content type and a flag and a rule and a view and some page manager stuff, treating those things all as one chunk of configuration that you can either turn on or turn off, I don't think that this really addresses that. And really at the very early beginning of that blog post, it even says that we're not trying to figure out contextual configuration right now.
Right.
And I think it also implies they're not trying to figure out bundles of configuration. They're just trying to come up with a system that is worthy of being in Drupal core, right? That does everything sort of like the quote unquote Drupal way, the right way, that would allow us to store configuration in this code or database with an API to modify it and then export it back out. System. That's step one.
Yeah.
We may not get to replace features completely in Drupal 8, for all we know.
And it sounds like, you know, based on what you just said, and as I'm rereading the beginning of this post, we don't want to. You know, because this does not, you know, like you said, features gives you the way to turn features on and off with a checkbox. This is not that. This is something lower level.
This is storing the atoms and possibly the molecules of configuration.
Right. Exactly. All right. I think we've beat this one as much as we can.
Yeah.
Excellent.
And if anyone doesn't know what to do with the next 17 hours, I recommend you reading all the comments to this post.
Yeah, didn't they used to number the comments on groups.drupal.org?
I think they run out of numbers on this post.
This one they may have. It is crazy how many comments. It just goes on forever.
Yeah.
You could probably print this out and, print it out in Swedish and publish this thing.
Yes, have a book.
There you go, exactly. All right, next story.
So, Mike, our next story is another project that you've been working on officially, unofficially with the Drupal Association.
Oh, right, I forgot about this one, yeah. Yeah, no.
Tell us about the genesis of this project first.
So this is the basically version 2 of the Drupal Camp and Event Organizing Guide. Well, there are a couple genesises. The more recent genesis was in DrupalCon Chicago. We had a couple of Birds of a Feather meetups of Drupal event organizers. And there was a lot of talk there about working with the association either as a fiscal agent or what they can do to help event organizers or what event organizers can do to help each other and what we could do to help people wanting to put on an event for the first time. And there's a lot of good discussion and good ideas that came out of that. One of the big things that came out of it, and for me it felt like one of the foundation, one of the pillars that we needed to do was we needed to start documenting all of these great ideas that these Drupal camps, Drupal sprints, Drupal clinics, all of these Drupal events do. They have all these great ideas, and we don't want to lose them. We want to capture that knowledge, and then we want to transfer that knowledge to people who haven't put on organizations but are interested. So I volunteered to kind of take the first pass at writing this documentation. So I started out with an outline that became way bigger than I ever possibly imagined. I got a lot of great feedback from the community. I posted it in the this is all in the Drupal event organization group on GDO. So we messed around with the outline for a little while, and then basically I just decided, I'm just going to start writing. I'm going to take it section by section, and I finally finished. Basically, it took me, three...
Did you write all of this?
I wrote a good portion of this. Yeah, I would say, I don't want to, I don't want to be the guy who pats himself on the back, but I had help, but...
All right. But that means you basically wrote a book, too.
Yeah, it's 12,000 words is what it ended up being.
Wow.
Which is crazy. But I wanted it to be thorough, and I wanted to write it in a way where it made it easy for... it's a wiki. First and foremost, it's a wiki. And I wanted to write it in a way that other event organizers could come and look up a section where they might have some special knowledge, see what's there, and add to it. There's a lot of little bullet lists in this documentation about... how to order T-shirts. When you order T-shirts and for an event and you don't know everybody's size, if you're not taking T-shirt orders, what's the size breakdown that you should order? Should you order 50% of them be large, 20% be extra large, 20% be medium? I mean, how does that work? I mean, you have to have these numbers somewhere, and all of these camps have already done this, so why not put that information in one place so that new event organizers have something to draw from.
Yeah. This is a great resource. This is a great resource. If I were to do a Drupal camp or just a small Drupal meetup or whatever, this is an excellent place to just find information and get ideas become a smarter person, I guess.
I mean, the idea is, and basically the reason why I wanted to talk about it on the podcast is because I'm now officially in the pestering organizers phase, where I'm reaching out to camp organizers that I know, camp organizers that I met at the BOF in Chicago, and saying, look, here, we have something, we have a foundation, but it's only going to be useful if we have a lot of specific information in there. So I just, I know Ben from Drupal Camp Colorado, which a second ago, Johan, you mistakenly called it DrupalCon Colorado. It's almost a DrupalCon. I mean, talk about just an absolutely phenomenal camp. That camp had over 400 people, I believe. Anyway, I've been reaching out to camp organizers as I see their camps happening, saying, hey, can you check this out and add something or tweak something? And for the most part, people have been helping out. But I really kind of want to make it part of the process of putting on a camp is, you know, and I know that by the, you know, when the camp's over, the last thing you want to do is, you know, do more work involving the camp. Usually it's the second that camp is over, you want to forget about it and get back to your normal life. But I think it's important, you know, just from a community growth standpoint, that we, you know, share that knowledge as quickly as possible back, and you'll capture and share that knowledge. So this is my way of pestering as many camp organizers at once to come to the page. Of course, the link will be in the show notes. And I realize it's a huge, long document. Pick out a section or two. There's a nice table of contents right at the very top. Read a section or two where you feel that you might have something to add, and by all means, add something and, you know, make it better.
Yeah, and as you said before, there's a lot of bullet lists in this, so you can easily just dive into the sections that you're interested in. It's not like one huge mass of text, but you can, like, read about getting T-shirts, and that only if that's what you want.
Yeah, I think, you know, we did it that way mainly because we, you know, bigger camps, I know, you know, our camp is not a huge camp. I would call the Florida camp a medium-sized camp. But we have a person in charge of T-shirts. We had a person in charge of food and drinks. And this is, you know, we designed this document so that the person in charge of the social activity, you can come and click on the social activity link and just read that one section and gain knowledge. That's the whole idea.
Yeah.
I've talked enough.
Well, and please add, because right now a lot of the lists start with this is what we did in Florida, and then it doesn't go anywhere.
Yes.
So that's very welcome and open for other people to come along and add. I know that I've been to other events, but I wouldn't have the link, as it were, to say, well, I know they did this at this camp, but maybe you can go and poke whoever it was that organize the camp and say, can you add this, right? That wouldn't be a bad way to do it either, is to distribute the nagging.
Yeah, I actually talked to, his name is Bart Feenstra, the gentleman, one of the two guys who just put on Drupal Jam yesterday up in Holland. And
Is that the guy with the nick, my name is Bart?
Correct, yes. Exactly.
Then his name is Bart.
His name is actually Bart, yes. That's his URL as well, mynameisbart.com. So... But he had actually seen the document, and he immediately said, it's great, but it seems like it's focused on U.S. events. And I said, well, clearly it's focused on U.S. events because that's all I know. This is where I need guys like you to come in and, you know, make it better. So, you know, I definitely want, you know, as many people contributing this as possible. You know, just to make it better and to make it, you know, a good, solid resource for, you know, future event organizers. Because we need, you know, Ryan and I have talked about this, and there are large cities close to where we live in Florida that don't have someone carrying the flag for Drupal. And therefore, there's not any big Drupal events in some of these areas. And I know that there's areas like this all over the country.
And that's sad.
Yeah, and so, you know, what does it take for someone to become, you know, a flag bearer for Drupal, someone to rally people? And usually all it takes is a little bit of knowledge and a little bit of confidence. And hopefully this will take care of one of those two, you know, two things. You know, let's give them the knowledge, and hopefully with the knowledge that will give them the confidence to say, hey, we've got a few people here, let's put something on.
So. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and the really overly confident people who may also be orphans, they might decide to put on a black cowl and then, you know, drive around in a big flashy jet engine driven car. And I don't know. I don't know how I could transition from Drupal Camp to Batman. But
that was the best segue ever.
It was my attempt.
Yeah, it was very natural.
My hands, my fists are in the air like cheering you on for the segue. Finish it. Bring it home.
So Everyone knows that DrupalCon London is the next DrupalCon that's coming up. It's the international Drupal event. Everyone in the world is invited. I know they're expecting thousands of people to come. It's going to be just outside of London, just south of the city. And they have announced a while ago that they're going to have a big party on Wednesday night. I think it's before the conference starts.
No, it's the opening night party. It's the middle of the conference. It's just like
middle of the conference.
Yep.
And there's a touring event going through the UK at that time called Batman Live World Arena Tour. And cue the music here because...
Okay, yeah, no, you just need to stop talking now and let that sink into everybody, for everyone. There's a live Batman show.
I think this is something that's fairly popular in the UK, is where... They do these shows that they should be like a stage show, but the vision of it is so epic that they just go to giant sports arenas.
Yeah, this one is a particularly big deal. It's taking place at the O2 Arena, which is it's like a big, you know, in the US it'd be like a big basketball arena.
Yeah.
But I know that this show is a big deal because I have seen posters for the show advertised in two cities in Belgium. So it's not just happening in London. It's like a tour. And it seems like it's a big deal. Like, as soon as I saw the poster, I'm like, when is that? And why don't I have tickets in my hand already? I'm a big Batman fan.
And what I think is interesting about this too, is for all of the geeks that may be listening, is that this is going to be the Batman stage show, and they will get launched on time and make more money faster than the stupid Spider-Man show in New York.
And I believe that this is the show on Wednesday the 24th is the London premiere as well.
Mm.
So this is a big
Very
deal.
Nice.
So I got to ask you guys really quick. My son and I, actually my kids and I, well, I don't want to leave my wife out because she participates as well. I don't know if she wants everyone to know this. But if you had to choose, who would you rather be? Would you rather be Batman or Spider-Man?
Spider-Man every single time.
Batman.
See, you're a sucker for the superpowers, aren't you, Ryan?
I like crawling up walls. What can I say?
Yeah, see, I'm a Batman guy all the way.
And I like Spider-Man's sense of humor. He's pithy. You know what I mean? He's clever and quick-witted.
He's a little too whiny. Don't you think?
Yeah.
I'm not talking about movie Spider-Man. I'm talking about comic book Spider-Man.
Oh, the real Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I think he's a little too emotional for a superhero. Batman has more of the...
machismo?
Yeah. He's a man's man. And he gets the job done. Even when he gets hurt, he's still getting the job done.
Yeah.
Spider-Man, what does he do? He goes and, hides for a little while, and I don't like that. Don't get me wrong, I like Spider-Man. I just would rather be Batman. So, all right. Anything else?
I have one more question, though, about this. Will the penguin be there?
Yes.
He is in the video, so I'm going to assume yes.
Yeah, it says, whisked around London for an evening of explosions, along with Batman, Robin, the Joker, Two-Face, Catwoman, and the Penguin.
That Penguin.
And I
and
just...
I'm just going to make a quick mention here also about DrupalCon London. I have not had any time to really look into it because there's a lot of stuff going on, but they've announced their schedule. Everything is up. You can tell what days, what rooms, which track everything is happening in. So if you're actually attending DrupalCon London, aside from the awesome parties, there's going to be great sessions too, which is, I guess, part of the reason why you go. I don't really go for the sessions. I go to meet people.
Johan, I guess we should have asked you this before we started recording, but are you doing any training or sessions at the DrupalCon?
I am. I'm doing a pre-conference training. I think the title of it is Advanced Drupal Configuration with Views, Flags, Rules, and Page Manager, something like that.
And that's a one-day session?
That's a one-day session. It's actually a three-day session, but I crammed it all into one day. So if you take that training, you're going to be really exhausted afterwards.
Bring your Red Bull.
Yes, and some kind of camera to record everything and play it back in slow motion afterwards.
Hey, and actually, I wanted to mention, I believe that the tickets for the Batman party have already sold out. I think that I believe I saw that on Twitter either yesterday or this morning that Batman is sold out. So hopefully you have your ticket.
I have mine.
Okay, so Johan, we will have you on the podcast right after DrupalCon London to talk about Batman.
Talk about the Penguin.
Yes. We need the full, you know, actually, if you want to prepare a screencast about the Batman show, that would be fine by me.
Okay. Yeah. So.
And I think, just for the record, if Batman had a website, it would be Drupal.
It would be Drupal, yeah. Drupal 8.
Of course. You know, he always has, like, the latest, so. Mm. All right, I think we've covered Batman at this point. I could go on, but, you know.
Well, Mike, I think it may be time to say a few quick words about our friends at Web Enabled and their awesome library of web applications that you can install with just one click.
Yeah, I was looking today at we always want to talk about Web Enabled because they're a great sponsor. They help us out with all of our development projects. But I always want to say something different about them every podcast, and it's getting hard because we've been talking about them for maybe a year now. I'd have to go back and look. So today I actually went to their applications page, and these are applications that when you set up a Web Enabled account, you can install these applications with literally like two or three clicks. It's crazy. And for our audience, most of the people are installing Drupal 6 or Drupal 7 or Acquia Drupal or OpenAtrium. But there are so many applications. I was blown away when I went to the app page today. If you're not a Drupal person, there's WordPress, there's Joomla, there's Magento. I'm just going to keep scrolling down here. And I keep on finding Drupal ones. There's OpenPublic. There's OpenScholar. There's Pressflow. OpenPublish. Civi CRM. I'm going to try and get away from the Drupal ones. Oh, here's Drupal COD. So CodeIgniter, MediaWiki, some other big ones. That might be all the ones I've heard of.
And they also have some paid themes that you can buy. I assume they're all Drupal. I think they are.
Anyway. Yeah, they look like they're all Drupal.
And so it's got a little bit of a marketplace aspect to it, too. And from what I understand, if you are a developer or a themer and you want to sell some of your stuff, Web Enabled will talk to you about doing that as well.
Yeah, you can actually create a distribution to sell. You just have to be careful of the GPL there, you know. But
I can also tell you, if you're a Drupal trainer and you want to have exercises pre-built, like a site setup to use with your students, then you can use Web Enabled as well and build your site, have it kind of saved down as an application the others can just start with and be ready to go.
Yeah, we've done that as well, Johan. Is you know all the your students have to do is create a free account and click on a link that you send them to clone your app, and then they have a duplicate of whatever you give them. It's really nice for training.
Yeah.
So check them out, webenable.com.
Very nice, very nice. And I guess it would now be time for our picks of the week. This is something we do every week. We try to pick a module. Sometimes it's a book, sometimes it's a video, a blog post, that we have found particularly useful and we want all of you in the audience to know about. So we're going to start with our stalwart companion here, Mr. Mike Anella. What have you got for us today?
I have a nice short one, nice short pick, a handy little module I stumbled upon somewhere. Actually, it was for a client. They asked for this little bit of functionality, and I said, well, I could probably do that with a small custom module, but just for the heck of it, let me see what's out there. And the issue was that once you're logged into a Drupal site, if for some reason you hit the /login page, you actually get a 404, access denied. Uh-huh. Or if you're already logged in and you try and go to /register, you get that access denied. And that's relatively easy to fix with a small custom module. Or you can download the already in module. And it's a very small, very simple module by Matt Vance. And all it does is just redirect you. If you're already logged in and you try and hit one of those URLs, it just redirects you to your user page. and pops a little message up on the screen saying, hey, you're already logged in.
Fantastic.
Good stuff.
I'm gonna go next, and the module I actually just found by our friend Damian McKenna, and I don't even remember where he lives now. He keeps moving all over the country.
He's in beautiful New Hampshire.
There you go.
Yeah.
I saw this on his Twitter, and I said, what a handy little module. That's a great pick of the week. It's called Select or Other. And so this is something that you see a lot on like survey websites where you say, which one of these following things applies to you? A, B, C, D, or none of the above. And if you choose that none of the above, you want to have an opportunity for the person to write something in. And so this is a module that exposes this widget to, if you're in Drupal 6 CCK, of Drupal 7, just the regular fields API, so users, taxonomy terms, and nodes, obviously, as a web form element to Apache Solr Search, or if you're a developer and you're writing your own custom forms in the form API, it's a select or other widget. And it looks here like it's checkboxes, but it could be select box or radio buttons as well. Any of the option widgets. And it's got an other box at the bottom.
That looks awesome. That just the fact that you can use it in so many different ways is fantastic.
Yeah. And if I had $1 for every time a client says, can't we add just other option to this? I would be kind of rich.
They'll buy a lot more meatballs.
Yes.
All right, Johan, what have you got for us today?
It was really, really difficult to make a pick of the week, but I have finally decided. It is the contextual administration module created by a guy online called Eclipse GC. In real life, I think it's called Chris Vanderwater.
Sounds like a Dutchman.
Yes, but he lives in the U.S. He's one of the commerce guys.
Oh, okay.
And what he has done is basically a module that integrates or works together with Page Manager, the CTools Page Manager, and allows you to create customized administration pages. And these pages can be a number of different things, like click here, a node creation form, a node edit form. You can have it like a node creation form, but this node reference field is pre-populated. It could be like create a new user, but have these fields stripped off, or have the user role set to these defined states, and the user won't be able to change it. The administrator won't be able to change it. And also stuff for like using taxonomy term pages, administer those in the context where they're actually used. So if you have, say, a new section on your site, you can provide tabs or local actions on these pages to administer the tags used for news, for example.
Did I just see a screencast about this? Is that possible? Not from you, but from somebody else?
It is definitely possible. He has made a number of really nice screencasts about this.
Oh, yeah, there you go, right at the top of the page.
And he was also the guy who taught me the difference between panels and page manager, which I will be eternally grateful for.
And you have shared that knowledge in the page manager screencast series.
Yes, I have.
Yeah, that I would say, and this is just from a purely selfish standpoint, that was like, for me, an extremely valuable series. Because that really did... Because anyone who uses panels, you're using Page Manager, but you don't even realize you're using Page Manager.
No, exactly.
And go ahead.
And often you don't know really what you can do with it.
Right.
Like all these context stuff in Page Manager or panels, what are these and how can you use them? And then if you start juggling with those, you can create really, really awesome stuff.
Yeah, yeah. It's this module looks really interesting. First of all, but the in order to I think really understand what this module does, it's almost a prerequisite to understand Page Manager.
Yes.
Yeah, and to understand Page Manager, the best way to do that is to watch Johan's screencasts.
No, you're too kind.
I know, for free. For free. Come on.
You can watch them twice without paying, and the third time you watch them, you don't have to pay anything either.
That's amazing. I don't know how you do it. How do you do it?
Yeah, we set up an Uber card site, and we disabled it. It was really easy.
Awesome. Hey, we have a site of the week. That's new.
Yay.
Yeah, so this is something, again, I was browsing Twitter before the show, and I saw someone, his name is right here on the paper, Matt Vance. Didn't we just talk about Matt Vance?
We did. He did the Already In module.
See, look at that. It's like two for one.
His name should be the name of the podcast. It's either the name of the title of the podcast is either Matt Vance or Sue Studio.
Yes.
Matt Vance Collins.
Sue Studio.
The basic thing is there is this a game that has been developed for the iOS platform, if you're into that sort of thing, that you the website is built using Drupal. It's very simple. It's straightforward. It's got cartoons. It's got some fun animations down at the bottom. And a really nice, simple brochure site. And I just saw this on Twitter just a few minutes before the show started, and I thought I would give him a shout-out because it looks very nice.
It's very pretty.
Los Angeles, it says. Oh, that's okay. This is their press release. They debuted something at E3. So there you go.
I like the little...
It's a very, very pretty site.
I like the little waves at the bottom. I know those waves have nothing to do with Drupal, but they're still very pretty.
Oh, they're blue.
They are blue. Exactly. And the guy all the way on the right kind of looks like Batman. Just saying.
True.
He's got a black.
This whole site reminds me of the old Worms game.
Oh, yes.
Worm.
That's good old-timey nerdy fun. Mike, we'll have to have some geek education later.
Yeah, I don't know about Worms. All right.
Actually, I wouldn't be surprised if you could like open up your iPad right now and type Worms in the App Store and get several, at least clones of the game, if not the actual thing.
I would try it, but I'm tethered to my computer with these headphones, so.
Make sure you don't get any viruses, though.
That's from Worms?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Worm viruses are the worst.
Yes.
Yuck. All right,
so,
Mr. Price.
At this time, I would like to thank our audience for tuning in to episode number 60 and the previous 59 episodes, assuming that you have done so.
Well, especially thank you for listening to the first one, because that first one was awful.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Episode one? Oh, go back and listen to it.
You might have to go back and check it out. So that right now I've got the rose-colored glasses. I was like, oh, back in the day when we all used to sit in the same room and record the podcast. Those were the days. Didn't have to worry about Skype and lag. And
Good times.
So, so Andrew couldn't be here today. He had another work engagement that he had to be at. But hopefully we'll be having more Andrew in the future. And if you want to check out some of our podcasts in the future, you can go to drupaleasy.com/podcast. It's also where you can find some show notes about today's podcast, all the stories that we talked about. Also, if you go to Delicious, we bookmark a lot of stories, Drupal Easy Podcast there, things that we may be talking about or maybe we didn't get to talk about during the week. We only choose 5 stories and 1 pick of the week and our site of the week every week, so you can always go and find out more stuff there. If you want to submit a site of the week, you can go to drupaleasy.com/site of the week, or you can call our phone number in the U.S. It's 321-441-3964. Leave us a voicemail. We will play that on the show. If you ask a question, give us a site of the week or other comment, that's our way of telling you, please send us stuff. You can find us on Twitter, Drupal Easy. Our other host, Andrew M. Riley. I go by Liberator with Web 2.0 spelling. Ultimike is the man sitting virtually across from me. And our sponsor, Web Enabled, as always. Finally, our wonderful guest, Johan Itangalo. Itangalo. You're right. You shouldn't try to say it out loud. I think that's the right way to do it.
Can you imagine how much worse it would be if Andrew tried to say that?
Very nice. And go check out node1.se, one spelled all out in English. Because I don't think that you spell one as one in Swedish, but I could be wrong.
But they do spell blog with two G's.
Yes, we do.
I like it.
Yeah, that's awesome. Good. I love this.
So go check out some of Johan's screencast and his other tutorials over at Node One. And we'll see you in London.
See ya! All right, that was awesome. Was that like an hour at least?
That was a pretty long one.
Smokies. Awesome. Yeah. All right, let me hit stop.